You're listening to Trot the Egging, hosted by John Hetherington, working with Widnes Rugby Union Football Club, sponsored by Boydells. Right, mate, so these lucky moments, were they before leaving school or after leaving school?
A bit of both, mate, to be fair. I had a really lucky moment when we were 13. Like, really lucky. Like, we got chosen to be ball boys in the Challenge Cup final. Which was like, Widnes was immense, but it wasn't meant to be our year, it was meant to be the next year, the following year, but because you can't, back then, you used to have under-11s curtain raiser for the Challenge Cup final, and you couldn't have teams from the under-11s curtain raiser being the ball boys as well.
Right.
Because they were two the same, it went to the next town down, and it was Widnes. So it was our turn. So everyone was like dead excited then. And
yeah.
I remember training at Simi's, and we had in the change room after training, and he'd drawn 10 names out to be the 10 ball boys for the Challenge Cup final. And I was 10th out, mate.
Happy days.
I was shaking like a leaf, mate, honestly. Yeah. I was like, oh, I need desperate to do it. And to walk out at Wembley and stuff, and I was a 10th name, I'll never forget it. I was ace. I mean, looking back now, I reckon it was a bit of a fix, if I'm honest.
Yeah,
because I think the seventh, something like six or seven of us that got in, like, Lancashire or something, were in it.
And right.
The three people that didn't get past the first trial were also in it. So okay. You're like, you look back and you think, oh, I wonder whether it was a bit of a Brucey bonus for those who did well, and a bit of a, you know, a peace offering for those that didn't do so good.
Yeah, a little well done, mate.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds a bit harsh that on the others and stuff, but I don't know. I'm just assuming there, to be fair. But no, that was a really big stroke of luck. And then a bit later on, when we were 16, then there was a tour to Australia, and a few years before, the likes of Lee Breeze and had gone on it and stuff, and, yeah. And then it come about for ours then. And when you go for trials, and they narrowed it down then to like 40. I think you were taking 40 players, and I was on the reserves. I didn't know I was on the reserves, but I just got the letter saying thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah.
So I was like, I was well disappointed then, because that was like a big massive dream of mine to play in us, and just carried on playing. And then it was done over 2 years. Because you have to do, obviously, loads of fundraising and stuff over the 2 years to get the money to go Oz and stuff. So about a year, about 12 or 13 months on, I got a call off Hayden Walker, who was the coach of it. And he asked me to come down. You've been picked and stuff. So I was like, and my mum was like, I've just paid for you to go Spain with the school. I can't do both. So I was like, nah, I can't do that. So I didn't go Spain with the skills, but it turned out that there was a lad from Wigan, Kelvin Pete, his name was, and he signed for Saints. The Saints wouldn't let him go; they didn't want him to go Australia, so he had to pull out, and I ended up taking his place. So obviously, I was reserved for that. So that, you know, they're the strokes of luck, mate. That, yeah, I had loads of disappointments in not signing for big teams and stuff like that, but I had loads of luck as well that shaped my life, mate, so I can't complain, really.
Yeah. So you leave school, and what are the options for you, mate?
I didn't, like you say, mate, I live in the moment, so I didn't really have a plan, apart from I just wanted an active job. So, you know, I wanted to be a firefighter or, you know, the bog standard PE teacher that it spits out in your careers meeting and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that, an active side of things. So, obviously, I had to go. My mum and dad tried to throw me down the apprentice route, but I'm not an engineer, mate. I'm not mechanically minded at all. Yeah. So I kiboshed that pretty quick and said, I'll just go to college. So I went to Halton College. And did sports science for 2 years. And you know what, mate? It was the best 2 years of my life. It was didn't learn a thing, not a thing. Because we just spent all day playing sports every day. We'd have like 2 hours a day in Kingsway playing five-a-side football. Every Friday for 2 years, we'd go skiing in the morning on Runcorn Ski Slope. And then and then water sports in West Kirby, mate.
So that's like a dream.
Oh, mate, it was ace. Absolutely brilliant. No one left it, mate. No one left the court for 2 years.
Yeah, I kept going back.
Yeah. Normally with college, you get loads of dropouts, don't you? You know, when you realize this isn't for me, I want to try something else. Not one person, mate, because it was absolutely brilliant. It was ace. And then from there, then, I wanted to be a firefighter, so you had to be 18 at the time. So that was going to be my aim to finish college. And I knew I was done with education. Like, I didn't want to go to university. I was done. I'd reached my limit with it. I wanted to get in the wide world and start earning some money and stuff.
And did the firefighter dream come off, mate, or what led you to want to be a firefighter?
Yeah, mate, yeah. Well, while I was in college, one of the lads I was in college with, Paul Rostands and stuff. He was a good player, Paul. He was like the year above, and he started playing at Lancashire Lynx Academy with just going down just for something to do through the summer, because his best mate Mike Grady, he had some sort of connection down there with his uncle and stuff. So being mates with Paul, I jumped on that with him, and I thought, you know what, I'll give it a whirl and just carry on playing through the summer. It'll be all right. And so I went down Lancashire Lynx Academy, mate, and started playing. And it just blossomed from there, mate. I played in the academy and I got a hat trick on my debut and that there. So it was like I was in then, you know what I mean? People liked it. You could see something and you just bang three tries in. So I played the summer there, and then they wanted me to sign down there, then took me to France and stuff as a sweetener to play in, like, just took me over as a sweetener. And they ended up playing at car park. It was Wigan, and in his little saxo, with a concert little saxo camera starting it. He sent to the car park in a saxo sign, you're like, where are
Well, but it's a great foot in the door for you, mate, isn't it? And it's an experience against like adult rugby at a good level, isn't it?
Yeah, it's something that I wanted to, like you said, about them life goals. I said, kid, and I wanted to play, but anyway, and they give opportunity. It didn't last. We were rubbish, you know, we were getting togged by everybody. But then, Steve got sacked, and after Temple, then, hey, ho, they bring him great, Huntley. Number one enemy, because I forgot what he did to me as a kid. So we were out on foot. To me, I wouldn't mind, but he's capped the team. And I was never seen in the and had a disagreement. Version wasn't my rugby. And at the time, there was a job, a service I applied for, and so I said, listen, I team needs commitment, and now I'm going to miss like 2 games out of every 8 with the shift plan, so can't fully commit to it and that. So they were and it just let you go on that and pursue your career. But on them, I have to tell him, my dad was gone. Gonna leave, like, left with the Tigers and went to life, and just made me go to the court rather than hide behind it. And the same when I left Lancashire Lynx as well, he made me go in and tell the chairman and great and all that. And I can never forget, maybe. And then we even after we played, and I remember that early was hot, mate. And he was a star fullback in 5 days. The opposition back, and he said to me after him in the club, and he was talking about it, and he was talking about Charlie Strikes, and he was blaming them all on me. And I was like, what are you on about? And he said, where'd you stand as a fullback? And he was like, but stand on me, I did the ball, he followed the path of the ball. You're there, and his last line of defense, a meter away, and he was like, no, you just follow your man. I said, what? He said, you just follow your man. I said, what are you on about? He said, he's injured on the right hand fullback, stand on the side, breaks left, and that's not out. That's the centre who's letting him. That's his he'll get for that. No? I mean, it's the wrong thing. You know? He just didn't get his me, mate.
Yeah.
I'd put back for you. I understood the game, and we just had a different block on it. So, bias coming up, me having a falling out with him, it just, things just into play, really.
Yeah. So, was that the blossom of the Simi's fairy tale then?
Yeah, mate, it was, yeah. I lived across the road from Will Shepherd, mate, and he was massive Simi's, because he would play through the years and stuff, and you'd always got into me, and they were like best mates to the Percivals who like read Simstross. So he'd got into me for years about coming down Simi's and stuff, so it was like the natural thing, and it's your local club dwelling, it. You know, the player on Dunbar Road, which is a bike ride for me to training and stuff. That's how I had me, yeah, just went down.
Yeah.
I've never forget my first session, mate. Get it. I wasn't like cock or anything like that. But just a point, you know, it'll be quite easy. So yeah, English, mate. and then I went in and went training at 6:30, and there's a fan trainer's Woolrich, and he did fitness for Widnes in there.
Right.
And he had the entrance, Michael's got us.
Yeah.
The big pack. I just do. I'll never forget, I was swimming up everywhere, and everyone at me like, he's from like the semi professional game. He's like, from his first training. Falling. My dad had me before.
So was them a lot of them lads people you'd played against in the past, mate?
Oh, do you know, I didn't know many. Went down. He knew the lot of Gilbert. He went with me and mate two old. Yeah, generally didn't know anyone. It was a bit mate to be
right.
Once they obviously skill set and stuff, you know, you see you can pass and catch it, beat your ass, and just about get everyone then, like.
Right. And could you see how good you were going to be even back then, or did it take a few of the younger lads to come up and step up, sort of thing?
No, mate, we were decent, but we were an aging team, so definitely we looked coming. Every year, and it must be years, mate. So we looking at as that we looking good.
Yeah,
and it good foul. Don't get me wrong. You know, they had tough play. Peter already there. Peter Worth and John Balls, the captain and stuff. Really tough players, like in you know what Sims Cross is about, like.
Yeah. So was you aware of what they were about before you went, or did it take these old heads to let you know about it, because they certainly do, don't they? If a newcomer comes to a club, mate, it doesn't matter what club it is, they let you know how good they've been and who's been there and what they've done, don't they?
Oh, yeah. I used to go and watch them back in the winter, because it was just tough, weren't it? It was a good
atmosphere,
and you see if you're having every single witness up game. So I knew of him through then, but much about this will come. The history and the wasn't too. It was John really, mate. Balls was the man having fun. He was so passionate about Simi's. His team talks, mate. You're ready to go to war, literally go to war on him. And that's where, like, he really instilled my, and it's going to sound terrible, this, but my hatred for St. Mary's. He instilled it, and the lads were sound at St. Mary's. They've got nothing against the lads, and they'd have a pipe with them any day, but just as a club, they were always like, just can't get beat by the Mary's, and this is why, because John was massive on instilling it, like, not to get beat by them.
So when was there a point when maybe a game come along that they might have lost, or they might have, like, snuck a draw out of, that you turn round one? And you sort of sense that you were becoming what you've become?
I don't remember.
Or was there a moment, sorry, was there something that swung it for you then when you thought we could go somewhere?
No, I don't know, mate. I don't know. I can't remember a particular point because we were at a decent level. But I do remember when we beat London Scholars, mate, in the Challenge Cup. And I remember then thinking, yeah, do you know what? We're beating professional teams here, and we were solid in defence and stuff, and that's what we built it on. But we kept the same team together. We're only with like plus one or two additions every now and then. But the core of the team was together for 8 to 10 years. So it was just
unheard of, really, that, isn't it?
Yeah, it was, mate. Yeah, you're right, it was. And it was just like a natural progression. Like I said, people from the outside used to look in and think, oh, it's dead clicky, I'll never get a game, and they're all this and they're all that. But when you're in there, it's not like that at all. And you know, and I remember Kev Buck saying the same about the Maddies and stuff. It gives you a different perception, you know, looking from the outside, and you shouldn't judge, really. And I'm guilty of that, as everyone else, you know. Like I say, I'm guilty of that with the Maddies. I'm sure the Maddies was a fantastic club and stuff, and the lads were cool, but I just had this hatred from the outside of them, and vice versa. But we stuck together, mate, for years, and I think probably that London Scholars game was probably right. You know what, we can really, really do something here.
Yeah, because I used to come and train with you, with Frank Malloy, because I was a mate of Callum's.
Ah, right, yeah.
Yeah, so I used to have like a little game of tick and pass with you, and then me and Callum would go and do whatever while Frank was involved, but I didn't get to know you as well enough, but I had Jonesy on, and Jonesy mentioned how good you all were.
Yeah.
But his team is West Bank, right? It is what it is, isn't it? But you showed him how good a side can be, sort of thing, he said, so... Like some of these big moments of yours, they're all on YouTube, mate, aren't they? So the final at Fylde and the final at Bloomfield Road, and
you're
virtually unplayable, aren't you? And
I tend not to watch that one on YouTube. I'm getting dragged all over the place by the
I didn't want to say it.
Percy up and you end up getting dragged skulls like that.
One in all wins the moth. Yeah, that's it doesn't matter what happens.
But now, without being cocky or arrogant, we knew we were good, mate. But we knew we had to turn up, and we built our thing on defence. Like everything was about, we can't get beat at home. No, if there's not a team on the planet that could stop us scoring, we were that many different skillful players. There just wasn't a team stopping us from scoring. So if we stopped them from scoring, we were going to win at least.
Yeah, and what creates that, mate? So was you answerable to yourselves? Because at the end of the day, you aren't on wedge, are you? You're still having a pint after it. And how does, not a pub team, but how does just the local amateur side get so good?
I think it's just one of them times in history, mate, where the right individuals come with the right mentality. Like a few ex-pros had come down, like Andy O'Neill and stuff. He'd had a dabble at Widnes and he'd come down, and he still had the right mentality. He still wanted to play, he still wanted to hurt someone, he still wanted to do damage, and training was fun, but it wasn't silly, mate. There wasn't people running around pulling your pants down or you know, tripping you up, and we had a good laugh and the banter was there, but training was training.
Yeah,
and we did what we needed to do, and I think everyone bought into it from the off. And I think once you start having a little bit of success, then as everyone talks about, you want a bit more, and you think, yeah, you know, that was really good, that was really enjoyable. Let's go again. And we used to set ourselves targets every year, and we wanted to first one to get beat at home, and the other one in the tough tackle at the end of the year. And we used to love. We get more joy out of nailing people, mate, than what we would put in 60, 70 past them.
Yeah.
And we were just all really close. We wanted to work for each other and stuff. And don't get me wrong, it was like every club, mate. If, you know, a few people out over women or a few too many beers or whatever. We had that like every other club. But the majority of us, because we stuck together so long, we knew each other inside out, and we were willing to work really hard for the guy next to us. Like,
yeah.
I do think it was just one of them personal things, mate. I think.
Yeah, just all the right people at the right place at the right time.
Yeah, and I think, because if you come down and you was an idiot, I think you didn't get treated any different, but I think you found your own place and found, you know what, this isn't really for me. I need to join another club that's a bit not as serious.
Looser, yeah.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
And did you in as much as you enjoyed all that stuff on the pitch, which is good company with each other off it, or did you have the odd mercenary that had come and go?
No, mate, majority all stuck together, and whenever there was a do, you know, a wedding, christening or anything like that, birthdays, all the lads were together, and we'd go out to Liverpool quite a bit. I mean, I was never a big drinker, mate, if I'm honest, but
Yeah.
you know, I still like to party with the troops, but I wouldn't keep up with them for days and stuff.
A little in between and of lemonade or something, mate,
ah,
the cheek.
yeah, mate, yeah. Well, I was the brains of the operation at half back, aren't you? You're the brains,
you've got
so
to look after it, mate.
Yeah.
Gosh,
let all them forwards think themselves silly, mate, yeah.
So when your playing career is coming to an end, mate, how did you take that? It sounds like you'd have been fine with it because you knew it was the right thing, but still,
Yeah.
was it a tough decision? But was something in you saying I'd have one more year?
No,
How was
mate,
it?
no.
No.
It was the easiest thing I've ever done. I was 28, and I've got, like most people, I've got OCD, mate, to a certain degree, like everyone else. I think everyone has, to be fair, to different levels, but I
Right.
like things that are square and stuff. And I'd done 25 years in the game.
Yeah.
I was 28. I'd achieved everything I'd ever wanted to do, and we'd won the National Cup in 2007, and there was nothing left to achieve. Like, but I wasn't playing my own game, mate. We had a new bunch of players coming through, and likes of Gary Midlers, who was outstanding. And instead of me organising the team and trying to win the game for the team, I was like in mindset, was like, oh, sorry, because if we get stuck here, Gary will get us out of trouble here because he's that good.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, I'm not playing my own game here, so I need to get out. So I just said at 28, I'm done. And you get everyone else saying, oh, you regret it, you're a long time retired and all that. And I never did, mate. I never did.
Right. So did they keep you involved in the game, or did you step away from it?
No, I had, well, I retired then at 28, and weirdly enough, I got a call a few months after I'd retired, stopped playing for teams. I got a call at work, and it was off some fella from Hull, some firefighter from Hull, and he was part of the Great Britain Fire Service team, and he was like, oh, I want you to come and play for us, and I was like, fucking hell, I've just retired. Why couldn't you phone me up 5 years ago? I'm just retired. So I ended up going down there, and played a couple of games for Great Britain there, and but I wasn't getting any time off work. All the other firefighters were getting time off work, but I wasn't. So
right.
I was having to take holidays to go and train and play with them. And they had big plans, mate, to play against the police and the army and stuff, and make this big, like, services into service type of challenge. So it had the makings of something good, but it was costing me time with my family, mate, because I was having to waste holidays with it. So
yeah.
On the head after a few games, and then I wanted to stay in contact with Simi, but then ideas, and I love Frank Petty, his colleague, and
yeah.
he had his own ideas, so he wanted his own team in. Just so I went away, to be just
yeah,
and then the court. I got me stuff. Simi's put me through me badges and that.
Yeah.
I'm gonna leave, join it, and it never did. I did, and I think it was like 2 years later on. I come
right, and how did you find being the other side of the line?
It gave me. I was always an active guy. We had sponsors and people behind the scenes, and I was when I was so I always go and speak to Tommy Bowles and Ray Fleming and a few of the ladies who worked in the kitchen.
Yeah,
people who did things in chapters, who did a lot in the, but I'd always go and make time for them. And when I started coaching them, you realize how much behind the job in the world is to play, because you just turn up, pay your subs, and crack up.
Yeah.
But coaching there, I was coming up with training sessions while I was in work, writing them all down, trying to design it and get what I wanted out of it. And then I was trying to chase sponsors to buy a new kit. Then I was designing a new kit. Then I take the kit to the laundrette, try and get money for this. Contact all the players, trying to get them to training. Booking somewhere to play in the winter, and you're like, wow, this is a real eye-opener. This, and it gives me a massive appreciation for what goes on, mate, in amateur rugby. And my lads players now for Holton Farm of Hornets, he started playing, and I will never dig into the club, mate, because he works so hard behind the scenes. It's unreal.
Yeah, it stinks of getting dragged in that. It does.
I'm not, mate. I'm not.
It stinks a bit, mate. Absolutely reeks a bit.
I've put some tag rugby belts on a few of the kids in the last few days, but that's my limit, mate.
You're already involved then.
I'm not. But no, with the coaching, mate, it took up a hell of a lot of time, and
it does,
we was lucky that we had, you know, we managed to get some success, and it was hard because the kids, no disrespect to them, they were lovely kids and stuff, but they weren't like what we were, mate. They're a different mentality and a different breed, and I said to us right from the offset, I was like, I've won all my medals, or I'm not generally not bothered. If you don't want to train on Tuesday and you want to stay in and watch Emmerdale, just tell me you want to watch Emmerdale, and I can tell everyone else that training's off and stuff. And you never did, mate. You'd get people saying, oh, I've got no credit, and you're like, credit? People stopped having credit 10 years ago, mate. Everyone's on a contract. These kids trying to pull the wool over your eyes. And there was one training session. We had a lad come down from Wales. His dad brought him down from Wales. And there was only about four people turned up, mate. They had to send him back home without training. And I felt terrible because he'd made the journey. And I was like, this isn't on. And I'm taking away time from my family, and people aren't bothering turning up. So I just had to knock it on the head then. His family comes first,
100%. So, how was you with injuries and that? Was you quite lucky with injuries, or?
In the grand scheme of things, mate, yeah, not too bad. I had a broken collarbone when I was 13. That was funny, mate. We only kicked off at 10:30, and I was in St Helens Hospital at 10:40 for broken collarbone. It was.
First at least you can laugh now, though.
Oh, yeah, first tackle of the game, mate. Got picked up and dumped on Wilmy Lane. Smashed. And remember going to Aussie in the back of my dad's car. My dad driving Miss Daisy to the Aussie. And I wasn't crying or nothing, mate. So my mum hit me and manipulated my shoulder just before I went in. Because you get sorted quicker, don't you, when you're whinging in the Aussie.
is that the excuse?
Yeah, mate, yeah. So you swear in because you don't want any disturbance in there, do you?
Yeah, I have to remember that.
So apart from that, mate, no, that was about it. There's loads of broken thumbs. I had really weak thumbs, mate, yeah. So I had a couple of...
You don't ever really get over them, though, do you? You're forever strapping it up then.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. But you'll take them, mate. You'll take them with the amount of injuries you see playing the game there.
That's it. Did you keep any stash from your rep days, mate? Or are you not that sort of person?
I am 100% that type of person, John. My loft is caving in, mate, with all the stuff I've got. I've got me Witness Tigers shirt, me shirts from Australia, load of memorabilia from that. I've got the flag that Man of Fire gave me on the Challenge Cup final day when we were walking around with the bitch. I've got me Langsy Lynx jersey, me National Cup winning jersey. Yeah, I've collected it all, mate. Loads, just all my medals, a load of medals and stuff. But mainly jerseys, mate. And like representative jumpers and stuff, like your Lancashire jumper and stuff like that. Nice, horrible.
That's brilliant, that.
Yeah, the idea, mate, is to have some sort of man cave in the future. But you know, everyone who's got a missus knows that's not going to happen, don't they? But it's still on the bucket list, mate, yeah. So, yeah, I've got loads, mate. And what I used to do as well, I used to keep all the programmes, mate, from every game I played. So yeah. I collected them for Charlie, and I collected them for Simmy's, mate, as well. So I've got loads of them.
Class, that.
Yeah. I find it quite nice, if I'm honest, mate, to look back. Is you don't appreciate things when you're doing it.
No.
Like, I remember being 16 in Oz, and I've got, mate, no word of a lie, I've got about, because there wasn't digital cameras back then or mobile phone. You had the wind-ups and that. And I've got about, mate, 16 pictures, something like that, of the underneath of Sydney Harbour Bridge. All the metalwork, mate.
Yeah.
And they're like, why have you took that? You took that because you're 16, you haven't got a clue, and you're with 40 lads just having a laugh, and you think, oh, I'm going to waste my camera just taking pictures of underneath Sydney Harbour Bridge. Now, when you look back now and you think, the things you've seen there, you went to Fiji and all that, seen all this beautiful stuff, and you've got pictures of underneath Sydney Harbour Bridge.
And you said you weren't engineered minded.
No, man. No.
You've been listening to Trot the Egging. Thanks to our sponsors, Bardell Sports. Follow us on Twitter at Trot the Egging and Instagram at Trot_the_egg_in.